Together, we can make your blonde, blonde. Sheer Blonde Go Blonder Collection by John Frieda lightens and brightens hair 2 full shades to give you your best blonde every day.
Hair talks. Make your statement with Sheer Blonde Go Blonder Collection, only from John Frieda.
Welcome to another edition of the Superflight Podcast, your Rube Goldbergian NBA podcast. It's Sunday, October 2nd, and I'm your host, Joe Borelli. Welcome back to the NBA, everybody. We had some preseason games played last night, which is awesome. I know they're just preseason, but I'm really interested in what's happening around the league and super excited that the NBA is back. I feel like it's been far too long. It feels like a really close friend went away and then came back and is talking to me again. I don't deserve this friend, but they came back to my life anyway. Anyway, real quick, ways to get in touch with the show. If you want to email, you can email at thesuperflightpodcast@gmail.com. If you want to follow on Twitter, it's at superflightpod. You can also follow on SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, and a host of other things that I don't really know about. And if you follow, please rate and leave reviews so that other people can find us. Welcome back to the NBA. There were a few games played last night. I know it's only preseason, but there were actual basketball games played. A lot of fun. So let's see. The Pelicans beat the Mavs, 116-112. Apparently, Buddy Hield had a really good showing. I think he had 19 points, and good for him, man. Again, really, it's just preseason, but, like, that's no joke. 19 points in the NBA is a good start. Hoping he has a good season because he's going to be fun to watch. He can shoot from everywhere. And, you know, the Pelicans are apparently really hyped about him. I mean, why not? He's going to help stretch the floor and give Anthony Davis some room to work. Also, you know, Etuan Moore, that's a great addition for them too. Really like Etuan Moore. I think he had like 16 or 19 or some points last night too. So, you know, maybe those two kids can work together in conjunction and start to form the basis for a really good team. We'll see. Who knows? It's preseason. Doesn't really mean anything. But basketball nonetheless. Toronto also beat the Warriors 97-93 in Canada. That's fun. Because, you know, Kevin Durant, NBA debut as a Warrior, which is crazy. Still don't really have my head wrapped around that. But that's going to be a really interesting storyline to watch all season. Obviously, like, I'm sure I'm not the only person saying this. But man, it's going to take a minute to get used to this. So I guess he had like a really nice highlight dunk, and he had a nice 3-point shot, which was a highlight. I didn't get to see the game. I just saw the highlights, but it's weird seeing KD out there, with the Warriors. And also I should, you know, mention that one of my favorite players of all time, Andre Iguodala, because yeah, he was on the Sixers, had that crazy pass behind the back to Steph Curry on the sideline, who was not playing in the game at the time. And Curry, of course, took a 3-point shot. They got called for delay of game. Either way, it was hilarious. It was really fun. But anyway, enough about that. Let's get to the show. So today on the podcast, I have a special guest, Damon Rangula. Hi, Damon. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. So Damon is a writer. He writes at falsehypothesis.com. And he has a podcast called falsehypothesis.com. You can check him out on iTunes, I guess, and
yes,
everywhere.
And definitely follow me on Twitter. I'm definitely plugging all my stuff. Sometimes I write for Silver Screen and Roll, the SB Nation site that covers the Lakers. So yeah, follow me on Twitter at @DAMANR, Daman R. I definitely liberally plug my stuff.
Nice. Yeah, as you should, as you should.
Yeah.
So today we're going to talk about some Lakers basketball, huh?
Yes, sir.
All right, cool. So I have some questions for you. Since you are, you know, you follow the Lakers, and I don't really. I'm more of a Sixers guy, as everyone who ever listens to my podcast knows. So I'm going to stay away from that today, but let's talk about some Lakers. What do you think? Let's just jump right into it. How do you feel about Luke Walton taking over this team?
It is such a breath of fresh air just knowing that the head coach of your team is actually competent and is living in 2016 with modern kind of thoughts and the ability to talk to players and talk to the media and just be an adult.
Yeah.
It is a remarkable departure from what the Lakers have had over the last, you know, few years.
You mean you don't like Byron Scott? You're not.
Yeah, and it's weird because it's gotten to the point with Lakers fans where we have overestimated just, well, I don't know, it's even hard for me to say that we're overestimating his toxicity, but it there's a lot of blame that goes on his shoulders. Some of it is unjustified because it's not only Byron Scott that why the Lakers were in such a bad position over the last few years, but Byron Scott sapped any possible joy any Lakers fan could have gotten out of watching the team and following the players. That is without question.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't even understand what he was doing. I mean, I know he's a, you know, apparently a Kobe fan, and he was doing everything he did for Kobe because they're good friends, I guess. But man.
And ultimately, it's such a bad look for the front office, but then they're also in such a weird situation where there's a transition going on with the team where they're in, you know, obviously after the Dwight Howard, Steve Nash experiment failed, any other team would just, you know, you swing for the fences, and part of swinging for the fences is you're going to strike out sometimes, and they struck out.
Yeah, exactly.
The only thing was you can't just let Kobe go. Kobe has said he wants to be a Laker for life, so you accept that. And so there's this weird thing of you have to rebuild on the fly. You have to at least make it look like you're not tanking for Kobe and for Lakers fans or for whoever they need to make it look like for.
Right.
So you have an aging superstar who's you know, it, like last year's farewell tour was basically a circus. But then you also have to manage developing young players and just that mishmash, it really, that you can't do that. But the reality is you cannot accomplish both things. And Byron Scott became a kind of a stopgap for the organization. And yeah, it's very silly to say this, but if Kobe liked Byron, that was good enough, because there's no way the front office and Mitch Kupchak and even, you know, Jim Buss, I think everybody knew how widely mocked Byron Scott was around the league. There are people, media personalities, that go out of their way not to mock anybody or anything, mm-hmm. because there's, you know, natural reasons. Nobody would stop at mocking Byron Scott. Nobody. No. It was that clear. So I think they just knew, they're like, look, and right after the season ended, to their credit, there was some worry that Byron Scott would get another year, but that was quickly squashed, and the front office acted quickly. I still remember, you know, Kevin Ding's tweet is the first tweet I saw about it, and I was just so overjoyed.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think Scott could have done a better job of managing his rookies and you know, helping the kids grow a little bit while appeasing Kobe. He did none of that. He just – and the choices he made, the ways he – like when he benched Russell, didn't make any sense to me. And it was just right. – it was a giant shit show. Sorry.
It was – no. Look. There's no question about it. There, you know, a lot of what we're going to talk about today about the future of this team, whatever kind of viewpoints I have or people have about these players and this team, it's so like, what do you base it off of? Because the Lakers haven't really been playing modern basketball, and these young players have been placed into a situation where they really haven't been put into the right spots where we can properly evaluate them.
Right.
And so there's this weird kind of blank. I wrote for Silver Screen and Roll that there's a clean slate, and that goes both ways, right? We could be overestimating just how bad Byron Scott was, and maybe the rookies do have some problems. Maybe D'Angelo Russell does have maturity problems. But until we have like a true professional running the team, who I'm assuming that Luke Walton is going to be that guy, You can't make that real. You can't definitively say, oh no, D'Angelo Russell would be really good if Byron Scott wasn't the coach. The problem is that we have not been given the fair chance to evaluate these guys. And that is the biggest failing of the Byron Scott era and the front office, where it sucks to say this, but as a fan, you look at it and you're like, we wasted 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, Julius Randle, D'Angelo Russell, Jordan Clarkson, these guys' years have gone wasted. The critical development years have gone wasted. And that's what upsets me more than, you know, the weird quotes from Byron and anything like that. It's that cuts that's what makes the whole thing worse.
Right. But on the same token, they're still young. They're still growing kids. And there's plenty of time to bring them around, to give them a basketball education. And so moving past Byron Scott, you've got Luke Walton. How do you feel about him just in general? Because I know that Jordan Clarkson apparently came out as saying when he was hired, he was jumping over his sofa in joy.
Yeah, us too, Jordan. We all did the same thing. It was almost surprising that Luke Walton, despite his ties to the organization, actually took the job, because I really thought that he could have stayed in Golden State one more year, or not even a full year, but he could have really waited for a very, very good opportunity, because Luke Walton has consistently earned the respect of his peers, and he stepped into a head coaching spot, you know, after the Warriors had won a championship, and managing a team right after they won a title. You know, there's that weird thing where sometimes a player thinks that he didn't get enough credit, or somebody like, you know, Draymond Green thinks that, hey, I deserve more shooting opportunities. And to navigate that and manage that is very, very difficult. And Luke Walton obviously did an amazing job. And not only that, he's put in the work. You know, he coached in the D League for a little bit. He helped at Arizona, and he, you know, he did a good job with the Warriors. He earned this spot despite being so young,
right?
And he was always regarded, even when he was on the Lakers, he was one of my favorite players, because he was always regarded as that cerebral guy. And he had a back injury, and he was basically an assistant coach under Phil Jackson for like 2 years, even while on the Lakers. So I'm very, very excited. I'm very excited about the staff he's hired. Jesse Mermoyes, he was in Toronto. Brian Shaw, who was, you know, he was basically a disaster as a head coach in Denver, but he was always a great assistant.
Right.
And I think Luke Walton being, you know, a young guy, being very laid back, being a player's coach, you still need that disciplinarian, especially with younger players. That's something that I don't think he's going to pick up on, like Luke Walton, because even in Golden State, you know, it was a veteran team. They knew what it took to be a professional. They'd won a championship. So that angle, I don't think Luke Walton had to worry about. And I think him having Brian Shaw on the staff, Brian Shaw can be that voice of like, hey, you know, you guys need to get it together. You guys need to do this. You guys need to, you know, be more professional. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of intelligence with the way Luke Walton has carried himself, with the decisions he's made with his staff. Really a lot of grown-up professional, you know, organizational moves that I think moving forward, this team, more than even establishing a good basketball mentality, it was to establish a good organizational culture. And I think that Luke Walton is absolutely the right guy, and I hope he, along with the team, grows together.
Yeah, for sure. I think he's a great signing. He does show every bit of like the intelligence that you're talking about. And he comes from a great, again, he comes from the Warriors. So like great pedigree sort of.
Yep.
And he knows what it takes to win, because obviously they've been winning, and they did great last year when he was running their team as the coach. I think he's probably going to be really good for D'Angelo Russell, because we know that he has some maturity issues. I just think he's like the sort of personality that's going to be able to bring him along, you know, slowly, and help him be accountable for the person that he is. Like right now we're hearing about how he's like enabling their or empowering his guys to learn the game by like teaching them good D and like not calling early timeouts, letting them get the feel for the game and take the game over by themselves. I think, you know, what do you think about that? That's what we've been hearing about from camp.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. I think, look, these we're probably going to talk about my, you know, projected win totals and all that.
Mm-hmm.
There are going to be a lot of growing pains with this team. They're so young. Young teams simply don't win. When you know that, it's better to let them make mistakes. You know, I point a lot to Emmanuel Mudiay in Denver, where last year he was so bad, especially shooting the ball. But Mike Malone never benched him. Yeah. Mike Malone, you know, let him go, because you need to let those mistakes manifest themselves on the court. That's the true growth. And if D'Angelo Russell is actually going to be a leader of this team, he needs to take charge, and he needs to take it now, not only from D'Angelo Russell's perspective, but the Lakers need to know too, hey, is this really the guy that is worth, you know, handing the keys to the franchise to? So from an evaluation standpoint, from D'Angelo Russell's growth standpoint, it's so smart to let him just go out there, be a leader, make mistakes, because look, we're talking about the young guys making mistakes. Luke Walton's going to make mistakes. Oh, Luke Walton, sure. he's going to show signs of inexperience. There's going to be some substitutions and some timeouts and some things like that. Everybody's going to grow together here, so that's great. But you have to let the people make their mistakes. And I think that's going to be the biggest thing, where Luke Walton's going to just let him play. You know, Phil Jackson, famously, when his team was struggling, sometimes wouldn't call timeouts because he would say, hey, you're on the court, figure it out. And I think that kind of mentality is what Luke Walton's going to bring to the team. They're not going to look good sometimes. They're going to look really bad sometimes. But I think when you let players, especially young guys, when you let them make mistakes and you let them figure it out together, they feel more responsible. They feel, you know, they take the challenge on more head on, and they work harder to improve. I think, you know, consistently, the best way for players to grow and learn is to just play more. And the playing time is so valuable, and that's what they were deprived of. And I think that's going to be such a huge, huge change. Just letting them make mistakes, I think that's so big, especially for a young guy. You know, you don't want somebody like D'Angelo Russell, who is very dynamic, is very much, you know, he has a lot of flash in his game. You don't want your head coach inhibiting that. You want them saying, you know what, go out, be yourself, make those mistakes, because it's on the player then after that to say, okay, I made these mistakes, I'm going to watch film, I'm going to work harder, right, I'm going to make this happen. But until they're empowered on their own to do that, that next step's not coming. And that next step is so important for D'Angelo Russell and other players like that to take the next step.
Right. And as you said, it's a matter for the team, for an evaluation standpoint too, because they need to know what they have with the players moving forward. They need to know if they need to, you know, if they want to invest time in these guys to bring them forward, or if they need to like start looking around, shopping them and see what else they can bring in. Which actually brings me to a really interesting topic, which is the Mozgov signing.
Oh, man.
Speaking of bringing in talent, how do you feel about that huge contract they gave him?
I will say, so I for years have been a Jim Buss and Mitch Kupchak supporter and almost apologist based on the amount of criticism they get. I think, you know, it's like a talking point I have is, when they swung for the fences for Dwight Howard and Steve Nash, a side effect of taking swings like that is that you will sometimes strike out. And I don't blame them for that. I want my front office taking risks like that. I want them, you know, going shooting for the moon every time they can. Sure, so sure. I think that they've rebounded well. They've drafted so well. You know, Jordan Clarkson is a starting caliber shooting guard, and they bought him from the Wizards with like the 46th pick was who Jordan Clarkson ended up being. And they got him, they got that pick for cash. So there's organizational moves like that that give me so much hope and optimism. But then for the Mozgov signing to be your 12:01 AM phone call.
Yeah.
And for them to lock him down for that money, it really just shook me to my core, because, you know, with being a basketball fan, I'm also a I'm an NBA. I like the business side of the NBA just as much as I like the basketball side. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at that contract like, okay, first of all, you way overestimated the market for not only Timofey Mozgov, but a center like him. You set the market and you didn't need to do any of those things. Even if you decided that, okay, Timofey Mozgov is absolutely our guy and we must have him, you know what? I will say that the people in the front office and Luke Walton and, you know, Brian Shaw coached Timofey Mozgov in Denver. I will say, you know what? They have an insight that I'm not seeing, and they've seen the medical records and they've seen all this stuff. So I'm assuming that they've done their homework, and I will give them the benefit of the doubt. So I'll move past Timofey Mozgov as a player. My gripe is 4 years, $64 million for Timofey Mozgov is a contract that would have been available July 1st. It also would have been available July 5th.
Oh, yeah.
They could have easily waited. They could have said, hey, Timofey, we really want you. Here's our offer. It's 4 years and $40 million. And Timofey would have been like, oh, we're offended. Or they would have said, hey, Timofey, we're really interested in you. Give us a day or two. We will come back to you and let the market set the rate. Because what they did was they tied themselves in for 4 years. They tied themselves in for a high dollar value,
right,
for a player that hasn't really had meaningful basketball playing for like a full year. He had a failed knee surgery, and you put all of those things together, and I still give the front office a benefit of doubt, saying, okay, you know what, maybe they know something that we don't know, but I will never, ever, ever come to terms with the price that they set it at, because if you're going to give him $16 million a year, I say, fine. So that means you can negotiate on years. Hey, we'll give you 2 years. You know, I would have preferred 2 years, $40 million over 4 years, $64 million, just because the Lakers have been in this kind of holding pattern of, hey, we're going to get a big free agent. We're going to get a big free agent. We're going to get a big free agent. And then this kind of hampers them. Well, and it's the cap mechanics of it. Yeah.
Yeah. The thing about it is, it's like no one was vying for his services. We don't know what he's going to be. And you're paying him like a star to be on your team for the next 4 years. You don't even know if you're going to get any production out of him at all. I mean, you'll get something, obviously, but what happens if his knees don't hold up? You're struck. You're stuck with him for 4 years. No one else was making that offer. They didn't have to do that. It was just sort of, I feel like they did it because they needed to get a name in here. And Mozgov's not even really a name.
Yeah, Mozgov's not a name. And Joe, you know, the crazy thing, Joe, is that if Timofey Mozgov is fully healthy and produces what the Lakers think they'll produce, I still think it's an overpay. And that's what drives me crazy. Yeah. Where the best case scenario, it still doesn't make sense. And you look at somebody like Cole Aldridge, who I can't remember the contract off the top of my head. I think it was maybe 2 years and $16 million, something like that, with Minnesota. I'm not being like an alarmist, or I'm not being a hater when I say I think Cole Aldridge is going to be better than Timofey Mozgov at least this year and next year, which is crazy that that is what the market was at.
Yeah.
And so it's also the cap mechanics of it, right? There's a few decisions they made. So Jordan Clarkson got his 4-year deal. So he was eligible for what they call the arenas exception, where for you, if you're a second rounder and you're signing an extension, you sign a 4-year deal. The first 2 years are at a very low cap hold, and then the next 2 years it spikes up. What that could have allowed the Lakers to do is the next two summers have even more flexibility to sign another free agent. But instead, they signed a 4-year flat rate deal, which it's not the end of the world, but this combined with the Mozgov signing, combined with the Deng signing, the Lakers were in a position to offer 2 to maybe even 3 max contracts next summer to now 1.
Right.
And so it's like that level of, it's like they did such a good job with their trades, with their drafts and all that. The worst thing that ever happened to this front office was to hand them money, because this is the first year they really had true cap space. Kobe was off the books. It was a clean slate. You know, they had a new coach. They were kind of setting this new thing up, and they, in my opinion, they really botched it. Now, what's undeniable? Timofey Mozgov, Luol Deng are really good guys, really hard workers, professionals, and for a young team, you need those kind of mentors. I argue that the price still isn't worth that, but if the locker room truly is as toxic as people some people say it was, having adults like Timofey Mozgov and Luol Deng in the room is truly going to be very valuable. So that is the flip side of this, where I can start seeing a justification in that guise.
Well, Deng for sure. I mean, I think Deng's been known as a really vocal leader wherever he's been, right? He's been sort of that, you know, caretaker guy. He's really good at what he does, and he's totally worth the money. He'll show the young guys how to come up. I don't know if Mozgov is that guy at all. I've never heard about him being like the locker room leader or anything, but you know, maybe they'll get something out of him. That signing, I can't really wrap my head around.
I know, man.
I just don't get it.
Me too.
Yeah, and I kind of felt bad for like Lakers fans when that whole thing went down, and like everyone else around the country I was scratching my head. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, anyway.
And what's the worst part is, I still stand by basically everything the front office has done post, like, you know, Dwight and Nash.
Mm-hmm.
But so amidst all my defense of them and, you know, the Luke Walton hiring was so great and all this, it's just like that just – it was the worst timing to have that kind of a signing where it's just like the people who, you know, sometimes don't pay attention to the minute details of what a team's doing, and they're just looking mm-hmm. at the record and saying, oh – Jim Buss is terrible and all these things, get rid of everybody. That almost validates some of the concerns. And truthfully, if this is also what it looks like next summer, well, maybe they're onto something. Maybe I'm, as a Laker fan and a homer, maybe I'm not evaluating correctly. It still kind of throws me off when I think about it. And Timofey Mozgov is a really hard worker, and I have no doubt that he's be very dedicated. But I just I find it so improbable that he justifies that deal.
Right. No, I've always been a fan of Mozgov. I really like his game. You know, I just even in a vacuum, he's not worth that.
Yeah.
But it's okay. You know, I mean, it is what it is. Yeah. They're going to move forward with it. They don't really have much choice.
Right.
But, you know, and you've talked about the front office. So they obviously maybe goofed there. But you talk a lot about the draft and how they've drafted hopefully the right players, which brings me to their young guys. And Brandon Ingram, what do you think of that pick at number 2 overall?
I think in some ways having the number 2 pick in this draft was the best pick because you weren't going to go wrong with either Ben Simmons or Brandon Ingram. They're very different players, no question, but they're both good enough players where you can count them as a building block. And I think, you know, obviously, you know, you're a Sixers fan. I'm sorry about Ben Simmons, but
me too.
But so whoever had that number 1 pick was going to pick their choice, and then the number 2 pick was going to have the alternative. And I think I'm really a fan of Brandon Ingram. Much has been made about his frame being skinny and all that, but
they said the same thing about Durant. You know,
right, exactly. So I think he has all the potential in the world. He's exactly what the Lakers needed. They needed a small forward slash power forward who can shoot the ball, and he's in a good position with the Lakers where the demand is not going to be on him to play heavy minutes early on. I think that's one of the key parts of the Luol Deng signing also, where he's not going to be forced to do anything early on to stretch him beyond his capability. He's going to have time to, you know, learn the NBA game, the pace of the game, the rigors of an 82-game schedule. He'll be able to work on his body. I'm very, very, very bullish on Brandon Ingram. He's the right guy. I see him long term. You know, he can play the 4. He can play the 3. This year, he's going to play the 2 and the 3 as his, you know, as he's growing,
mm-hmm.
as his body's filling out. But long term, he can be in like an amazing stretch for a small forward kind of player.
Yeah. I definitely see him as a 3 or a 4.
Yeah.
And he seems like, from everything you see, interviews and all that, he seems like a really smart kid. Really smart kid, really hard worker. He seems like he gets the game and gets more about like what the game is. He gets life and like just seems like he's very mature. As opposed to, say, someone like D'Angelo Russell, who by all accounts seems like kind of a knucklehead and a little bit immature.
You know, one underrated part about the players that the Lakers have assembled here, the young guys especially, these guys love being in the gym. They love working on their craft. They have a really good feel for the game.
Yeah.
It's never going to be the case where every single prospect pans out, but the one thing you can demand as an organization, as a team, is that they work at their craft and they're hardworking and they take instruction. And, you know, maturity issues aside that have been rumored, this core absolutely buys into that. You know, they had like in the summer, they had this breakfast club where in the morning, 9 a.m., breakfast at the facility and young players were working out together. And you just love to see that as a fan because you're like, okay, I don't know if these guys are going to be all-stars or whatever, right, or they're going to truly be building blocks of the organization, But God damn it, they're trying and they're doing what they can and they're taking instruction and they're taking coaching. And that excites me more than anything else.
Yeah, it gives you hope for the future. It gives you like the hope that they're going to take it seriously. They're going to do the right things and bring the franchise back around to, you know, its glory days, maybe.
Hopefully at some point.
They're a long way off, obviously, them and the Sixers. I think we're looking at the two worst records in the league here this year. But
I think the Brooklyn Nets might have something to say about it. But yes, well, you know, the Lakers have the top three protected pick. And, you know,
ping pong balls aside. You don't have to tell me about that pick.
I know. Ping pong balls aside, I think the Lakers will definitely be in contention to keep that.
Yeah. I'm rooting for them to get the fourth overall pick. That would be great.
Yeah, we're going to be at odds on lottery night.
Yeah, yeah. I should definitely have you back on for lottery night. Yeah. I'm rooting for the Lakers this year to do just as good as they possibly can. But yeah, what do you think about? I know you wanted to talk a little bit about the positional flexibility of the team. Like I was a pretty big Julius Randle fan when he was coming out of college, and I thought that kid was going to be really good. And so far, I know his first season was robbed of injury. And I've read a lot about him working on his three-point game this year.
Yeah.
What do you think about their positional flexibility? It seems like they have got a decent mix of veterans and young guys. So talk about that a little bit.
So I think that's both a benefit and both a blessing and a curse, because there's going to be players on this team that feel like they deserve minutes that aren't going to get it. And that probably is going to be Luke Walton's biggest challenge this year above everything else, because you look at Timofey Mozgov, we talked about. Mm-hmm. They signed Yi Jian Lian, and I think he's going to be the backup five. He's actually looked good. I found his signing to be very odd, but he's actually looked very good in training camp. And so they drafted Ivaka Zubac, who's this, you know, he was a phenom in summer league. He looked really good. And that's just the centers. Mm-hmm. Then you have Julius Randle, Larry Nance Jr. Larry Nance Jr. today, in my opinion, has a better feel for the game and is a more NBA player, NBA ready player today. Now, I am more down on Julius Randle than many of my fellow Lakers fans are, and it's unfair. It's unfair on my standpoint, because, like you said, Julius Randle, his first year was robbed of injury. I don't know where he fits in the spectrum of NBA forwards,
right?
Because I don't think he has the size yet to play small ball center. I don't think he's going to have the opportunity this year to play any small ball center just because of the roster composition,
right?
But at the same time, I almost have to disregard. This is the difficult part of you know, the Bayern experiences. I kind of have to disregard everything that's happened before, and I have, you know, it's a blank slate for Julius Randle as well, where he's going to get a chance to prove himself. Now, where he's impressed me and where he's surprised me is the amount of strength he's picked up this summer, and that's what we forget about players of his age, where their body is still growing and their body is still filling out, and you don't know exactly how it's going to pan out. Julius Randle, by all accounts, was the strongest guy. Like, nobody could back him down in training camp. Mm-hmm. That's very encouraging, because that'll shut me up real fast if Julius Randle can truly be an impact player on the defensive end. And if Julius Randle has a three-point shot, well, then, yeah, now we're talking about not just a good player, a very good player.
Right. And if he has a three-point shot, you can start using him like Draymond Green a little bit.
Right. And that's funny you say Draymond Green. Draymond Green highlighted Julius Randle when they played each other as a player to look out for. And I think if Julius Randle is going to look at any player to model himself after, you cannot do much worse than Draymond Green. Draymond Green, if Julius Randle ends up being a poor man's Draymond Green, I will be the happiest Laker fan in the world.
Yeah, you should be pretty happy about that.
Yeah.
I mean, if he could step out, hit the three, he obviously has to have the ball in his hand a lot, which is maybe a little bit of a detractor for him. But, you know, handling the ball, being able to step out and shoot the three.
He's so fun in transition. When he's in transition, oh, it's amazing.
Yeah. I have high hopes for that kid. I mean, like, if he's really worth it, I think I read something that said he was taking 1,000 shots
yes,
per day
yes.
or something. which I don't know what that equates to because I've never I've never done that.
Yeah. And you know the and so I kind of walked through the depth chart at center. The power forward situation is also Luol Deng was at his best last year when he was playing the four.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not going to get any chances this year to play the four because they're going to prioritize Randall and Nance. I mean, there'll be some, you know, they'll try to have their kind of, you know, mini death lineup thing going where I can see Russell, Clarkson, Ingram, Deng, and one of Randall or Nance at, you know, 3, 4, 5 minute stretches at a time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that would be a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
But other than that, I don't see how Luol Deng gets minutes at the four. Where he was, I mean, at this stage in his career, that's probably where he's best at. There's like I'm saying, I really am a little bit concerned about, you know, some player being upset because I could very easily see Larry Nance Jr. kind of stepping up early on, even though, you know, there might be comparable players. And if Randall's playing less and less, I can kind of see him making a little bit of a stink about it. Not against anything against Randall. I'm saying anybody.
Right.
You know, whichever player out of this young core, when we talk about Russell, Clarkson, Ingram, Randall, Nance, any of these guys, if the minutes start shrinking, you know, these players are hungry and they're hungry to prove themselves post Byron. I can kind of see that there might be a little bit of friction that develops. And that's kind of goes to the roster composition. And we'll see how that pans out. I mean, for a team as low in the standings as the Lakers will be, they have a lot of depth.
Yeah, they have a lot of depth. I agree. And I think, again, going back to Luke Walton as their head coach, I think he's probably going to do a really good job of keeping those guys in line and keeping the friction from happening too much. I mean, it seems that way from what we've seen of him coaching in Golden State. He just seems like he's a player's coach, and he's
right.
He really gets the guys that play for him. And, you know, I mean, I've seen clips of him with the guys in camp. Or in,
yes,
and he,
yes.
You know, they're out there having a good time. He's like slapping them around and like, yeah.
Seems it's like such a departure, I get so every time I see Luke Walton just talking to the young guys, I get so excited. Just they're gonna be so bad, but so fun. Like I don't care. I don't care about them winning. It's just like I just want to see them be professional basketball players for once.
Oh yeah, I mean, last year that team was unwatchable. I mean,
really
god awful. I mean, first of all, I don't know. You're probably gonna hate me for saying this, but I've never been a Kobe fan.
I get it.
That has to do a lot with the coming from Philly thing,
right?
But yeah, and you know, obviously Kobe was going out. He had to get his shots. He had to get his points, man. Whatever. Yeah. It was the goodbye tour, and I think, you know, it was a sneaky yep. tank job.
Yes. Hey, so, we did it.
You totally did it. You totally did. But I think this team this year is going to be just infinitely more watchable. I'm actually kind of excited, even as bad as they're going to be. I mean, like, I'm going to do nothing but watch bad teams this year between the Sixers
right.
and the right. Lakers.
Right, right.
All
right.
the young teams coming up. For me, I've always felt that, like, watching a team get good is almost more rewarding than watching a team just, like, the Warriors. Like, they're already good. You know what they're going to do.
Right.
It's kind of boring
right.
to watch them, like, dominate everyone. So,
no, it's you know, the best part of being a fan is to ride both, right? Ride the climb, but then ride the thing. I became my biggest year of where just really diving into the Lakers was probably one of their worst years. The year that Shaq left, the year after that, when it was a terrible team, but there was something so, I don't know, is probably I was the right age where I started picking up on basketball, like techniques and kind of play calls and it kind of how the motion worked. And, mm-hmm. And that was the disastrous year where Rudy Tomjanovich was hired, and then he resigned, and Frank Hamblin was a coach for a little bit, and it was such a bad year. But that was the year I got most invested in them, and then watching them climb from that to, you know, and
back
then
to
there's
relevance
the Kobe,
again. Yeah.
Right back to relevance again. There was that Kobe trade demand in the middle, and
oh, yeah.
It was such a up and down. But then ultimately we got, you know, the 2008 lost in the finals, and then 2009 won. And that is awesome. So that is where we are now. Me and you, we're watching our teams develop the next great teams.
Hopefully.
And it's I know, it's so painful. And especially for you. I mean, I've had Byron, but you've literally had, like, injuries upon injuries
oh,
upon
my
injuries.
God.
So I can't even.
It's, yeah.
I still feel bad. I know we were talking about Ben Simmons before we got on, but I still
yeah.
feel bad.
Yeah, it's you and me both. I'm not even – I'm like – I'm like a widower. I'm not even ready to talk about it yet.
Yeah, I know.
So enough about the Sixers. So tell me about this Nick Young and D'Angelo Russell feud. Is it squashed?
I think, it's weird when people call, D'Angelo Russell immature and all that. And obviously the recording of that video was stupid. I mean, there's no other way to say it.
Yeah.
But the aftermath is where I judge a person's character. And I thought D'Angelo Russell was far more mature and in his handling of it than, Nick Young, who's 10 to 12 years older than him.
Yeah.
I think Nick Young was definitely continued to be upset that D'Angelo Russell did that Foot Locker commercial where with Ben Simmons, like, once again comes up, and his one advice to Ben Simmons was to throw his phone out into the ocean. It was a really funny commercial, and Nick Young tweeted something about it, like, he was very sour about it. And I think between now and then he came to the proper realization, like, hey, if you continue to act out, the Lakers very easily will just cut you. I mean,
exactly.
D'Angelo Russell's not going anywhere.
No. And what's Nick Young's position anyways? Like, exactly. He's going to be coming off the bench, right? Or is he going to be their starting two guard?
He's going to come off the bench. And I actually think he's not going to, he's going to have to be just a good citizen who, he's not going to get any minutes past, Jordan Clarkson's going to be the starter. Lou Williams is going to be the scorer off the bench. We have Jose Calderon, who I actually really like as another veteran leader in the locker room.
Definitely.
And so you have guys like that. I think Nick Young is going to have to spend this year rehabbing his image around the league. I don't anticipate him getting any playing time. I think there's a way in which, maybe due to injury, maybe if, in a worst case scenario where if Cleveland really can't come to terms with J.R. Smith, a situation like that where it's a veteran team that is in the need of a piece like Nick Young, maybe there can be some kind of a trade. The Lakers won't get anything for him, but at least he won't be dead salary on the books, because there was a lot of talk about them stretching his contract or waiving him,
mm-hmm.
and that would just be dead salary. So it looks like the Lakers have chosen not to go that route. But the moment Nick Young acts out, they'll cut him. And so his best case scenario is just be with the team. Don't be a nuisance. Work out with the team. Be a good veteran leader for once, in his career. And I think that's the only real outcome in which Nick Young honestly stays in the NBA. Because if he continues to act out or the Lakers cut him, I really highly doubt that another team would even take a shot at him at a veteran deal, because he really has only had one or two good NBA shooting years. He just carries a reputation of being a shooter. His best time was under Mike D'Antoni, so maybe Houston could take a look at him.
Clippers would probably take a look at him.
he just seems
like a Clippers player,
true.
You know?
That's true. And Lakers castoffs tend to end up on the Clippers because, hey, LA is a nice place to live, and on a veteran's minimum, maybe they can make it work. But I think in general, Nick Young is not going to factor into the Lakers' depth chart, but if he can be a professional, I think, he'll still be on the roster, and he'll be available for any team around the league that wants him.
Yeah, I think, honestly, I don't think there would be a lot of teams vying for his service, seriously.
Yeah, I don't either.
I mean, people always look for a shooter. Like, shooters, they're great to have around, but he's just, he doesn't do enough other things good. And to be a...
I think if you can be in a situation where it's you have a veteran team that's a good team that can kind of keep him controlled, it's not a bad guy to have off the bench as injury depth, but I don't think you can count on him truly to be in your rotation.
Yeah. I totally agree with everything you just said. So let's talk. What do you think? How do you think they're going to do this year? What are you most looking forward to seeing out of the team this year?
I am looking forward to seeing, I want Luke Walton to spend as much as this year experimenting with lineups, experimenting as much as he can. It's this odd juggling thing he's going to have to do with balancing the veteran minutes and minutes of the young guys. But I want to see as many different possibilities of lineups just to see what the Lakers really are possibly capable of.
Mm-hmm.
what I do worry that because of the veteran signings that they're going to have this, you know, I'm confident they know they're not a playoff team, but I hope they don't get into this thing of, well, we're going to keep trying to win games early until we really are out of it. I want them to come out of the gate just with the mindset of our number one and number two and number three and number four priorities are just development, yeah. development beyond wins. I you know, they're a very young team. I don't anticipate them winning a lot, but they won 17 games last year with Byron Scott and Kobe Bryant, you know, that farewell tour. That they weren't focused on playing basketball, especially the last half of the season. So I have them at about 10 more wins than last year, at about 27. I still think that
it's a little high.
It is. I think the over under is 24.5. I do still think, though, that'll be good for worst in the West. Phoenix may slip under, but it'll be neck and neck between Phoenix and LA for worst in the West.
Yeah.
I just think all the teams in the bottom portion of the Western Conference definitely got better, but I still think relative to that, the Lakers are still at the bottom. I think Phoenix may be a little bit worse. I might be overestimating just how good some of their players are, especially if they make a trade. They trade either Brandon Knight or Bledsoe. Mm-hmm. But in terms of overall wins, I think, I have them as 10 more than last year. But I still think that that's good for bottom three. I thought that they would be bottom two with the Nets at the bottom. But now, unfortunately, with, you know, your team's Ben Simmons situation, the Sixers might slip into the bottom three they might slip into the bottom two as well. But I think Brooklyn is the only team that I can kind of confidently say is going to be worse than the Lakers. Other than that, I think they'll be a bottom tier team. But I think it's going to feel like a good year. It's going to feel like a growth year. And I'm rooting for them to keep the pick. I know that you are not.
Well, you know, can you blame me?
No, not at all.
It seems like it wouldn't matter anyway. We'd draft someone in who would get injured and be out for the year anyway. So.
Oh, that's so brutal.
Oh, it's so rough. I think I would have them around 25 wins. I'm not so optimistic as 27 as you have them, but it's not that much of a difference.
No, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah. I mean, that's two wins for being a homer is not bad.
There you go. That's not bad. I think you're on the right track. But yeah, again, everybody around them has improved this year, so it's going to be hard. Yep. And the West is always so tough to begin with.
Yep.
Yeah, I think for me, if I were watching the Lakers all the time, I would just want to see exactly that. I would want to see the coaching get better. I would want to see development out of the players. If by the end of the year, like Brandon Ingram is like doing some crazy things on the court that you just look at him and you say, wow, this guy is gonna be really good, that would be enough for me. I would be
that
super
would be,
happy.
That would be awesome. Yeah, it'd be awesome.
D'Angelo Russell, you know, he strikes me as still a little bit. I agreed with what you were saying about the Swaggy P thing and like he needs to, you know, just cool it. Russell seems a little bit immature with some of the stuff he does on the court still. Like the ice in the veins thing, it's like you're showing out a little bit too much there, buddy. Like, calm it.
And you know, we've spent way too much time about Byron Scott, and I think he spends even more time about it. Every interview this summer he's been given about Luke Walton, he seems to continue to want to throw shade at Byron Scott.
Yeah.
He's got to move on, and he's got to be more mature than to not bring it up continually because, hey, we get it.
Right.
Byron Scott was bad. You don't need to keep reminding us.
Right.
And that's where I tell, you know, my fellow Lakers fans, like, hey, you might blame a lot of D'Angelo Russell's reputation on Byron Scott, and that is justified. But don't discount the fact that there might also be true immaturity issues that they have to deal with.
Oh, yeah.
And I think I'll definitely keep an eye out for that. And I think that, you know, Brian Shaw and Luke Walton, they're going to have to kind of get his mind right, because I think his feel of the game is very good. I think what I love most about him is he loves passing. His Ohio State, I watched a film of him at Ohio State. He really loves passing.
Oh, yeah. He's a great passer.
Right. And it's like, there was a little bit of a worry where it's like I really like Kyrie Irving, but he's more of a shooter and a scorer. And I worried a little bit about that, about D'Angelo Russell. But I looked at, you know, if you look at tape from even last year, part of not having a good offense, like having a very ancient offense, is you have a lot of ISOs. So D'Angelo Russell was not given the opportunity to kind of develop his passing. And he's such a good pick and roll player, but last year he was pick and rolling with, you know, Roy Hibbert.
Right.
And Roy Hibbert can't catch passes, and he can't really cut to the basket like you need to. So I think those are the kinds of things where I think when D'Angelo Russell starts feeling more responsibility of the team running the offense, you know, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of motion sets where D'Angelo Russell has to make a lot of decisions on the fly. Mm-hmm. I think part of the maturity will come just from that, where it's like, okay, D'Angelo, we told you to go do this. This is your team. Your team has not scored in four possessions. What are you doing about it?
Right.
And I think the maturity on that level, when his responsibility increases on the court, his responsibility will also increase off the court. I think it's those two things will come hand in hand.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to think about it. I totally agree. Totally agree. I don't really know if I have much else to ask you about with the Lakers. I think we did a pretty thorough dive, right?
I think so, too.
Well, I'm going to thank you for coming on. It's been great having you.
Seriously, thank you so much for having me. I hope to come back.
Yeah, definitely. I would love to have you back on again. Anytime you're free, just let me know. You want to plug your website one more time?
Yes. So I think above all else, please follow me on Twitter at DamanR, DamanR.
Great. Daman, thank you so much for coming on the Superfly podcast. It's been great
thank
having you.
And, thank you very much.
If you ever want me to come on and talk Sixers, just let me know.
You know it. I will.
All right. I'm going to let you go. Take care.
All right. Thank you.
You got it. Bye-bye. So there you go. Daman Marangula, thank you again for coming on. Everybody, please follow Daman at DamanR on Twitter and check out the False Hypothesis podcast and website. And he also writes for Silver Screen and Roll. Yeah. On occasion. So check him out. He's really good and very smart, bright guy. Anyway, I think that's it for me for this week. We're going to have another guest for you on next week and the following week after that. So tune in next week. In the meantime, you know how to get in touch with the show. It's the Superflight Podcast at gmail.com. Follow at Superflight Pod, Stitcher, iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play, and leave reviews and rate the show. Because I said so. I'll do it. All right. Anyway, thanks for listening. I'll see you guys and gals next week. Peace out.
Why pay hundreds more in taxes and fees on your wireless bill? Introducing T-Mobile One, now with taxes and fees included. Get four lines for $40 each per month with AutoPay. Switch your family of four to T-Mobile and get a $600 prepaid card. It's kind of like a refund on the taxes and fees you paid to those other guys last year. Don't wait. Visit a T-Mobile store.
Top 3% of data users greater than 28 gigabytes per month may notice reduced speeds. Sales tax and regulatory fees included. Effective with February charges via prepaid MasterCard card. See store for details.